Chapter 71. Andros, you motherfucker! Caris had waited a week to say those words, so she didn't reveal she knew exactly what had happened in Perea immediately, but checking off Curse Out Promarchos wasn't quite as satisfying as she'd hoped.
Yes,
he said, as if she'd simply called his name. He'd come into her room carrying two cups.
Kopi,
he asked, proffering a delicate cup. I thought we were working together, she said. She didn't take the cup. He raised his eyebrows.
Go on,
his expression said. He lowered the proffered cup. That was no suicide. You killed the Nukaba, didn't you? She demanded.
Yes.
She hadn't expected him to admit it. Crafty old rat.
You ass! After all you and I went through drafting that ultimatum, you just assassinated her. She didn't even have time to respond. I hated her, Andros, but she unified the Perean people. She could have led them to our defense. This is betrayal, Andros. Assassinating a Nukaba. Are you mad? With how much we need Perea, and how fraught the relationship between the Chromeria and the Nukabas has always been?
He put her cup down on the table. He sat in one of her chairs, taking his ease. He sipped his kopi. When the silence stretched on, he looked up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought those were rhetorical questions. Done ranting? So soon?
He made her feel powerless, foolish, like a child. Uh-uh. He moved to take another sip, as if thinking, and Caris's foot flashed out. If she'd paused to think about what she was attempting, she wouldn't have tried it. Her foot swept between his seated legs, pushed forward, and kicked only the delicate cup as he tilted it to his lips. The cup popped into the air, jetting steaming kopi into Andros's face and hair and across his chest. Andros roared, blinded and burnt, but Caris was still moving. The killing instinct imbued by so many years of fighting had taught her never to wound a foe without following up to kill immediately. Caris kicked off half of the sole of her right boot, and before he could lurch out of his chair, she stood balanced easily on her left foot with the blade of her right foot, now lined with an actual blade, pressed against his neck. She caught the kopi cup. The blade along the edge of her boot was thin. It had to be small enough to conceal in her boot sole and not interfere with walking, but against his neck it was plenty big enough. Andros sat back down, but the rage didn't leave his eyes. He raised one beringed finger and pushed her foot aside. She pivoted easily and brought her foot down, but stayed ready for an attack.
That, my dear, was a miscalculation, he said.
His eyes flicked to the empty cup she'd caught in her hand. She hoped it was because he was impressed. It had been damn lucky. But she couldn't back down.
I'll decide that.
Oh, I didn't mean for you. I meant for me. You took me by surprise. It doesn't happen often.
He looked about for a cloth with which to dry himself, and, not finding one, or a slave to hand him one, he made an expression as if to say, What am I, among barbarians? He picked up a priceless lace pillow with a tiny shrug as if to say, Oh well, when among barbarians do as barbarians do. And he wiped his face and neck dry with the pillow. It was a pretense, all this calm. The rage never left that deep corner of his demeanor. Call that a victory, then. The skin on his face was burnt. She couldn't tell how badly yet. But there was no retreat. A burnt face. He'd murdered that woman. Tyr had damned herself in her own eyes because of this man's orders. Caris couldn't feel remorse.
So, he said, any news on your hunt for Gavin?
No. He was not going to get her derailed, especially not into that. Did you kill Satrapa Azmuth too? She asked.
Clearly not, he said. She wasn't a Satrapa when she died.
Is that a yes? She asked. Why would he admit to a murder he hadn't committed?
No. The woman was a complete idiot. My sources say she had a paroxysm when the Nukaba told her she might not back her claim against us.
So he hadn't known Azmuth was the Perean spymaster. Or, damn it, he was merely pretending not to. She said, My sources suggested it might have been because we stripped her of her position that she had a heart attack then. I thought her death might be on us.
I imagine the pressures of working with that lunatic Haruru for years had more to do with it.
Why kill her, Andros? If your assassin failed or had been discovered, you'd have plunged us into a war with two fronts. You're not so rash.
Andros gave a sour grin through his pain.
You didn't know me when I was young, before I gave up drafting red for the same reasons you did. Back to using again, are you?
Damn her light skin. Her blushes were obvious, and so was the light staining from using red again. The truth was she'd been drafting to try to spur on some feeling in her heart toward her son. She and Zymon had gotten off on the wrong foot, and things still weren't going well, this many months later. It continually struck her as somehow off. No doubt that was an artifact of the abuse he'd endured. Her fault. Raised without a mother's love, abandoned and abused by those who'd taken him on, any flaws he had were on her. But she'd finally admitted to herself that she didn't like him. What kind of mother doesn't like her own son? She'd been trying to train herself to have good feelings around him, so they had wonderful food for dinners together, excellent wine, and she drafted red and what sub-red she could, all the things that could provide perfect soil for a new relationship. But she was a stone. It hadn't worked. Not yet. And when he kissed her on the lips in greeting, she flinched away from his innocent gesture. She couldn't reject him, not after all she'd done. She hadn't answered, and Andros took her silence as assent. He picked up the kopi he'd brought for her and sipped it as if nothing had happened.
We were working together, High Mistress. If the new Kaaba were going to comply, I'd given orders that the assassination be called off.
A lie, almost certainly. Tia hadn't mentioned any way for her orders to be cancelled, and no one there from the Order could have gotten orders in time to stop her regardless, because they didn't have skimmers. Unless Anjali Gates belonged to Andros. Damn, yet another person to put in the file of those who might be Andros's. Note, investigate Anjali Gates. But Karis couldn't let him know that she knew the possibility of cancelling the answer to be a lie. Or Holum's balls, it was impossible to keep all this straight.
As it was, Andros continued, we were able to establish how hard you are and how dangerous it is to cross you. Your ultimatum drove a new Kaaba to suicide, which it only would have if she'd already been planning to commit treason. And because she'd died before she could come out against us, none of the people who would have joined her had done so publicly. Think of it this way. If things are close and the tribes aren't sure who to side with, if they'd followed her and then we killed her, they would fear you'd hold it against them. So all things being equal, they would then have to join the White King. This way they still have the possibility of joining us.
Why would they fear me if they hadn't acted yet? I've shown myself to be forgiving when possible.
Ah, but you see, men never believe others are more good than they are. Bad men see mercy as weakness. Smart men see it as shrewdness. Saintly men might see the truth of it, but sadly there are few saints among those we're trying to convince to join us.
And you've guaranteed that, she said, though she couldn't argue with that much. She had dossiers on all the tribal chiefs, and she knew all the satraps and colours herself. No saints among those, and few enough even among the High Luxiats. Because of what you've done, we'll have people join us who have only the barest loyalty. We may be inviting traitors into our midst.
A truth every time one recruits. Would you forego allies altogether? Andros asked. I've seen you down at the yards, watching the training.
What of it?
You accelerated the training. How many drafters have died because of that?
I don't know, she mumbled.
Horseshit!
12, she said.
12 dead. To save some number you'll never know. That's our business here, Iron White. Trading blood now for what we pray is less blood later. Stop looking back.
Who's to say the tribes who join us won't turn when we get to battle? She asked. Andros grinned smugly. It was a cold mirror of Gavin's, happy self-satisfaction when he did something clever. Gavin's delight made you want to join him. Andros's made you hate him more. He said,
That's why I blooded the Parians and Hrothgari early at the Battle of Oxford. It's hard to join up with an army after they've killed your sons and brothers, even if it is in your best interests.
You're saying you sent them to die on purpose?
I wasn't hoping they'd be massacred like total incompetence, if that's what you're asking. But I sent them to what I knew would be a hard fight, yes. The Parians in particular used to have a reputation to be exactly the people for that. That their losses would be another thing to keep them on our side if things went poorly was part of my thinking, yes. I knew the new Kaaba was crazy, but I didn't think she was insane. She might not even have been able to bring her people to join the White King. But if she'd tried to join him and instead started her own civil war, that wouldn't have helped us either, would it? Not in time.
So you had reason to think that Satrapa Azmuth would join us?
Weak people like Azmuth don't lead rebellions. They fall back to doing what they're supposed to do. At worst, she would have dragged her feet, and another visit, this time by you or me personally, would have been sufficient to regain Perea once and for all. Of course, the Pereans have the same problem that afflicts every fighting force subjected to protracted peace.
And what's that? Caris wasn't sure they were done talking about his assassination, but Andros slid from one thing to the next like an eel.
Do you know the true genius of my second son?
What? What did Dazen have to do with this? Gavin. Oh, hell. Yes, she did know Gavin's genius quite well, thank you.
Dazen was brilliant. Smarter than Gavin. But Dazen had his mother's...
Andros cut off suddenly, overwhelmed with emotion. He'd really loved her. And instantly Caris felt the ice of her hatred for this man shiver, and a crack run right down the middle of it. If he could love Felia, then he could love. Unless this too was a game. Was Andros so vile that he would use his own wife's death to manipulate Caris? Andros cleared his throat.
He had this ability, a perishingly rare ability for those who are good at practically everything they do. He knew where he wasn't the best, and it didn't bother him. He led his people, and he fought on the front lines, but he put another man in command of his armies. You met the man he chose, and he was not a choice anyone else would have made. At the time, Corvin Danavis was the last living son of a shattered, once great family.
Caris had met Corvin, but her own memories of any time before the False Prism's war were dim and tainted with grief and self-recrimination.
Corvin was bookish. He'd gone along on some raids with his brothers, but had never fought. He was too young. As the youngest of 10 brothers, he never dreamed he would lead, nor did they. Then the Danavises got swept into the death orgy that was the Blood Wars. Corvin's brothers tried to take a shortcut through a swamp to surprise their enemies and were captured and flayed.
Now that was something Caris hadn't known.
Do you know what happens to a drafter who's been flayed? Andros asked.
Caris's distaste must have shown on her face.
Same thing that happens to any man. Incredible pain and flies and infection and fever and slow, horrendous, inevitable death, unless he crafts a Luxin skin for himself. There was a law at the time that any man who turned white forfeited all his family's belongings. So Grissel Spreading Oak, yes, Bran's older brother, flayed all 7 of the Danavises he captured. When one broke and finally drafted skin for himself, Grissel killed all the ones older than him and took that one to a friendly Luxiat. One bribe later, and the Spreading Oaks took 4/5 of the Danavis properties, and the Magisterium 1/5.
Orholm have mercy, Caris said. That was sweet Bran Spreading Oak's brother?
Ah, no. I would have negotiated for at least 1/2, Andros said,
but he smiled slyly. He knew what she meant.
Anyway, according to my sources, Corvin wasn't even an officer when he joined Dazen. He'd fought for 6 mercenary companies since his brothers died. He was a brawler and an angry drunk, and every time he got promoted, he got fired again. When his people's lives were on the line, he couldn't stand incompetence, and he couldn't keep his mouth shut. He joined Dazen immediately, but the old guard wouldn't give him so much as a squad. That is the problem of peacetime militaries. Most of them train for peace, and they produce officers good at peacetime activities. Smiling sycophants, mostly. Men who look good at balls rather than men with balls. Dazen apparently saw Corvin lingering one day over the maps after his superiors left. He quizzed him, thinking he might be a spy. He was wrong, of course. For several months I had no spies at all in Dazen's army. He inspired such devotion. Dazen was so impressed by Corvin's answers and how keenly he saw things that he put Corvin in charge immediately. The audacity! And then they led together, Dazen bringing Corvin up to speed and Corvin showing a preternatural gift for strategy. They worked hand in glove. If he'd come in earlier, or if it weren't me they opposed, bleeding off allies who might have joined them, they might have won the war. The only mistake they ever made was letting themselves be drawn into a full-scale battle at Sundered Rock. Of course, they say Corvin was deathly ill at the time.
This is going somewhere, Caris said.
I'd intended to have Corvin take command of the Perean armies. Indeed, all of our armies. If he was willing to join Gavin after having fought against him, apparently his loyalty to the Guile line is strong. Or he simply likes fighting. Doesn't matter to me. My son was right about Corvin. I'll not be too obstinate to admit it.
This is all fascinating, and I'm not against Corvin leading our armies, at least not in principle, but we're not finished talking about your assassinating one of the most important people in the Seven Satrapies behind my back.
Caris, dear, I've done nothing but amplify your power. This Iron White business might have seemed a whimsical affectation before. Now you will be feared.
Or you will be even more so. As much as this was a demonstration of my power, it was also a demonstration of yours. We both signed that ultimatum.
It isn't either or. We can be feared together, like Corvin and Dayton, hand in glove.
With me as the glove, Caris said, and you the hand. I thought we wrote that letter together to show a united front, but really it was so your name would be attached to this. He didn't deny it.
People need reminders. Just because there's a new power in the game doesn't mean all the old ones are gone. Besides, I did do all the work. I'm sharing my glory with you, not the other way around.
How did you do it? Caris asked. She didn't expect an answer, but it was a question she would ask if she was in the dark, as she was claiming to be.
I'm not telling you that. I'm the Promarchos, and I go before us to fight in the ways I deem best. Now, your options are varied but simple. You've yelled at me. You've questioned my sanity. You've made certain that I knew what I was risking. You've expressed how you wished I'd tell you things before I did them, and you've spilled my drink. Now you simply have to decide if you're going to try to remove me from my offices, if you're going to try to kill me, or if we're going to get back to the delicate work of trying to save the satrapies, because my plan worked, insofar as I could have predicted. Azmuth's death, however, leaves us with some very particular difficulties.
He looked at her, questioning, waiting, and apparently not the least bit worried. She'd been outflanked. Again. And this was what it was like to have Andros Guile as an ally. Damn him.
So, can we move on now, he said, or are you going to ask the Blackguards to seize me? Will they, I wonder? Technically they answer to the White, unless there's a Promarchos appointed. I know what a stickler like Commander Ironfist would have done, much as it might have pained him, but maybe Commander Fisk would be overwhelmed by his personal loyalty to you instead.
What was she going to say to salvage her dignity? Don't do it again? He'd do it again in a heartbeat. This was not the partnership I was looking for, Caris said.
That makes two of us. I would prefer you to be completely subservient, Andros said.
Was that a hint of a smile? Caris pursed her lips. So where do we go from here? She wondered which of them had been more wrong about Perea. Had she destroyed everything by killing Satrapa Azmuth, or had she saved them from ruin by frustrating Andros Guile's plans? The intelligence she was getting from Azule was fragmentary and contradictory at best. Maybe the whole country would dissolve back into its tribes. And of Iron Fist, she'd had no word at all. Andros said,
Well, obviously the first thing we need to do is send a letter. The tricky part is what to say, and for that I was hoping your lighter touch might be helpful.
What do you mean? Whom are we sending the letter to? Andros smiled, superior again.
Why, to the only person who matters in Perea now, of course. King Iron Fist.
Caris was ashamed that her first reaction wasn't joy that her old friend was alive, or that he was free, or that he was in charge. Iron Fist hadn't claimed the title Satrap. He hadn't become Nukaba. Iron Fist is calling himself King.